This is Deanna Spingola. It is Friday, July 27th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is Bare Bones Broadcasting. My guest today is Pastor Eli James. And up until just, probably 24 hours ago, his website was anglo-saxonisrael.com, but the ADL decided to remove his website. He also has a website, Kill the Bank, all one word, killthebank.net, which is still up. So, welcome to the program, Eli.
Thank you, Deanne, I'm really grateful for the opportunity for me to do this interview with you, because I really think that the ADL and other Jewish groups and communist groups as well, they really hate freedom of speech, and they, rather than debate us publicly, they use threats and intimidation and whatever clout they might have to remove our websites and to, demean us, demonize us, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really what's happening here, Deanna. That's exactly what's happening here.
Right. And you were telling me just before we went live that you thought that they would have done this some time ago and not waited because of some of the things that you have said.
Right. I'm sort of surprised it's taken them this long, but it may be part of the current effort to, get rid of guns and to get rid of pro-gun broadcasters such as myself, right, in the wake of the Aurora shooting, which I feel was a false flag done by the feds to, make guns more and more unpopular. But actually that backfired because the citizens of Colorado went out on a buying spree the day after to buy more guns, right? So they're going about it the wrong way, right?
Well, there certainly is a lot of rhetoric about that incident and the fact that that his father was a big investigator into the banking corruption.
Right.
And there's even talk that the person that appeared in court is not actually the son, but is actually a different person.
Right, a doppelganger, right?
Yes.
A stand-in. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because the nose, the nostrils of the two people don't match at all.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So, something's really sick about what's going on there. And it's just another of the many Jewish / federal false flag operations they have pulled. Oh, actually, ever since Pearl Harbor. And they've actually pulled off many more. 9/11 would be another. So it's just an ongoing thing. And we know for a fact that the House of Rothschild, the World Jewish Banking Establishment, which runs this country, and the ADL and other Jewish groups are primarily a mafia-style organization, the World Jewish Congress, American Jewish Congress, ADL, SBLC, AIPAC, etc. All these Jewish organizations have taken the money they have and used it to control politics, and they've used it to control freedom of speech as well.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And they've been doing that since they established the ADL.
That's right.
Since B'nai B'rith established the ADL after the Frank murder, the wealth.
I want to talk about that. But first, the reason I contacted you was the fact that the ADL had sent a letter to my web hosting company, which is the Endurance International Group, and the actual web hosting company is known as PowWeb. Okay?
Right.
I've been on PowWeb for a good 6 years with no problems. Somebody did try to hack my website on one or two occasions, but PowWeb was able to assist me in preventing that from happening. And other than that, I've never had any real problems. They've been actually a very good web hosting service, okay? And up until July 17th, when the ADL sent this letter to PowWeb, and it's not very long. It's about a page and a quarter. If you don't mind, I'll just read it.
Please.
Okay. Dated July 17, 2012, in handwritten notes on the right to the of the date is POW Zundelsite, POW Eli James, POW Muchacho. I've never heard of Muchacho. I don't know who they are, but Zundelsite is I forget what his first name is, but Zundel
Ernst,
Ernst.
Ernst, and it's really his wife runs it, Dr. Rimland, Ingrid Rimland, and yeah, I mean that's a site that they would probably want to get rid of also.
Right, because Ernst Zindel has been reporting on Jewish criminality for decades, right?
Until
And
they deported him to Germany.
yes, right. First to Canada, where he could be tried and held without bond, right?
Right.
And
Yeah,
then
he
Germany.
lived in Canada from the time that he was 19, for several decades, and then he reprinted a book, Did 6 Million Really Die? He didn't actually write it, he simply reprinted it and sent it out, and of course this drove the Jews up there and the Zionists up there crazy. And so they went against him. I mean, they burned down his house, they terrorized him, and yet he was being tried as the terrorist when in fact he was the victim of terrorism.
Absolutely. This is the type of thing the ADL is known for, and of course, but not via the mainstream press, because they have so much power and influence via their connections with the Zionists, with the rabbis, with all these other Jewish organizations that I just mentioned. So the mainstream press, which is also largely owned by the Jews, will never report on any criminality of the ADL. Simply will not do that. And so what we have is a gigantic umbrella, Jewish umbrella, covering the criminality of these various Jewish organizations and the fact that none of these criminals will ever be exposed by the mainstream press because it's owned by the same people.
Right.
Okay.
And of course, that's the whole point of having the ADL, too, not only to go after people like you, but to conceal the criminals, the many, many,
That's
many
right.
criminals, the Jewish criminals.
That's
So.
right. That's right. Yeah, like one of the last things that Bill Clinton did when he left office was he pardoned Mark Rich, another international Jewish criminal, right? And
Right.
some such things, you know. So this is ongoing total corruption of our society by these Jewish organizations because of the money that the Rothschilds and the Warburgs and the Rockefellers, they have so much money that they buy governments and they can buy armies and they buy corporations and they own, through their banking operations, they have basically owned the entire world through interlocking corporations. Okay? That's how they do it.
Right.
Okay, so here is the letter that the ADL sent to PAWEP, addressed to Hari Ravichandran, CEO, the Endurance International Group Incorporated, 70 Blanchard Road, 33rd floor, that's third floor, Burlington, Massachusetts. Dear Mr. Ravichandran, in the course of the Anti-Defamation League's work combating hate and extremism, except their own, we study and analyze information about the abuse of digital communication media. And they've got plenty of money and people sitting at computers to do this. Some of our recent work has involved investigating registration and hosting information for the most egregious hate-filled websites. We write regarding our concern about your company enabling the spread of hate on the internet. The problem continues to grow. And it's going to continue to grow if the ADL continues to censor us. And we are hoping that you will be responsive to our concerns and consider partnering with us to address this serious issue. Using website metrics and reviewing online rhetoric, we have identified the primary 300 websites responsible for promoting hate and intolerance. We utilize the Who Is database and other public domain information to identify hosting and registration details of the offending websites. Our analysis of these complaints, and nobody actually really complained. They're the ones who are complaining. So I don't know where to get these complaints. Nobody, I don't recall having any complaints about my website in the last 4 or 5 years. In the early days, I used to get complaints from Jews complaining about the content of my website. And then I usually responded to them by saying, well, are you an Ashkenazi Jew or are you an Edomite Jew? And which one is the tribe of Judah? And then, since they were unable to answer that question, they never bothered me again, right? Okay? All right? And so, and here's what they say next. Our analysis of these complaints indicates that the Endurance International Group hosts multiple websites, mine being listed first, www.anglo-saxonisrael.com, the Volksfront Median org, and Zündel site. They specify these three in the letter here. Upon reviewing your company's terms of service, we have discovered that your stated policy, quote, users may not utilize the services to publish or disseminate information that A, constitutes slander, libel, or defamation, threaten persons with bodily harm to make harassing or abusive statements or messages. Now, certainly, on my website, I have not done any of these things. I have not slandered anyone, libeled, or defamed anyone. All I have done is published factual information, most of the time quoting Jewish sources about Jewish criminality, both historical, current, and worldwide, and the fact that the Jewish religion is, in fact, a racist, xenophobic, supremacist religion, quoting their own sources. Okay? And this is the basic content of my website as pertains to the Jews. The rest of my website is nothing but Bible scholarship showing that the Anglo-Saxon Caucasian people are the real Israelites of the Bible and the Jews are imposters. So given the content of my website, I can see where the ADL would not want this kind of information disseminated, but I absolutely deny that it's slander, libel, defamation, or any such stuff. It just
right.
isn't. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, they went after me. Let's see. They went after me last year. And it was, interestingly enough, it was right about the time that I had what I called Ernst Zündel Week.
Oh, okay.
Which started the 9th of May and ran to May 13th. And during that week, I had some nice German marching music for my intro and
okay.
out music,
right.
bumper music.
Okay.
And but they went after me on the 6th of June.
Okay.
And they said that, well, actually, they I started using on the 19th of May. I started using Peace Train. It was readily available on YouTube. There had been numerous downloads. I thought it was in the public domain, but I thought, well, I like that music. I'm going to use that for my bumper music. And I started using that on the 16th, and that was at RBN. And about the 6th of June, they wrote to RBN and threatened to sue them for $250,000, and also wrote me an email and with the same threat. And they said that they were in partnership with YouTube, and
oh,
you know, the
that
music
doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that the music had a copyright. It was actually a lawyer that had control of this copyright. But I really don't think it had anything to do with the music at all. I think it was the content of my programs.
Sure, sure. Very good. Well, it's obvious that they use intimidation, and if they can't directly criticize you for what you were actually doing, they'll find some other way of intimidating you and sending you the message, hey, we the ADL are watching you.
Right.
Right? And that's what they were doing. No doubt about it. Yes. And obviously, Ernst Zündel, being the controversial figure that he is, he's actually one of those many victims of Jewish false prosecution, many of whom have been dragged over to Israel to be put on trial there, and falsely accused of being, Nazi war criminals, etc., etc. You know,
Right.
and
Now he
so.
hasn't been accused, he hasn't been taken to Israel, but he's certainly been dragged into a couple of courts. He
Right.
had two trials up in Canada, one in 1985, one in 1988, and they proved conclusively that the Holocaust is a big fat lie.
Right.
And
Yes.
he paid Fred Leuchter to go over and do some forensic testing on what the Russians said were the gas was the gas chamber, and there was absolutely no way that the Germans could have gassed anybody.
That's right. That's right. And my friend Germar Rudolph, who was in Chicago for quite some time, he was also arrested and deported because of his revisionist work.
Right, and he's a
Right.
chemist and
Yes.
basically said the same thing.
Yes.
He was on my RBN program not too long ago, and he's a delightful person,
Yes.
wonderful, wonderful scholar. It was just a delight to chat with him.
Right, yeah, and all of the forensic evidence disproves the theory that the Germans gassed Jews and then burned them. Okay, there's no forensic evidence whatsoever. In fact, the communists even admitted that the so-called gas chamber that right now is at Auschwitz was actually built after World War II. They
Yeah.
added it to the facility, and that's why there's no traces whatsoever of Zyklon B gas in the brick and mortar.
Right. Actually, it
Okay.
was a bomb shelter, and they took out some of the sections, some of the walls.
Yeah.
They built a chimney, but the chimney wasn't connected to anything.
Right.
Really ridiculous.
Yes.
But they have these tours, and in fact, yesterday, or actually Monday, I was talking with somebody. And he said, "Well, I've seen it." And I said,
Yes.
"Yes,
What did you
you
see?
probably did see it,
Yeah.
but what you were told you were seeing wasn't what
Right.
was actually there."
Right. And not to get off the subject, but whenever somebody confronts me about the Holocaust, which I refer to as the Hoaxacost, I simply ask them a very simple question. If the Germans were running out of fuel, if their tanks, trucks, submarines, and airplanes were running out of fuel on the battlefield, why in the world would they waste fuel burning corpses?
Exactly.
Please explain that to me.
And why would they give them all tattoos if they were going to kill them right
There you
away?
go. There you go. So that the ones who got out could brandish their two tattoos before the world, right?
Exactly. That's
Right?
it.
Evidence, right? Yeah, you see, I'm a survivor. Well, we're all survivors, aren't we?
Sure.
So far we've managed to survive Jewish lies up to this point in our lives, okay?
Right.
So let me continue here with this letter. Anyway, they say that the terms of service prohibits the content which appears on the websites hosted by your service. Okay. Well, they did not refer to any specific content on my website. And you can't just make a general accusation that everything on my website constitutes defamation. They
Now,
have
did you contact your web server and say, okay, specifically,
Right.
who made the complaint? What are they asking me to remove?
Right. I did.
And what'd they
I did.
say?
Well, I said, they need to specify the exact content that they consider defamatory, and then we can proceed from there. This vague accusation is not will never stand up in court, so we need to we need to get down to specifics.
Right.
And but they never did. They responded to me 2 days later. I got their email last Tuesday at 11 a.m. telling me that unless I remove the said content, which was never specified, that my website will be shut down in 48 hours. So I responded, well, what is the content that needs to be removed? Please let me know what the content is. And They never really responded to that email, although I called up and I got one of their secretaries and I said, I need to speak with the law office and they need to tell me what content it is that's offending the ADL. Okay. They never responded to that. And so then, as they said, 48 hours later, I got a notice that my website had been taken down.
Unbelievable, okay. These right. People.
Yes, yes. Let me continue with a couple more paragraphs.
Yes, go ahead.
We are in the process of preparing and publishing a public report on hate sites that are hosted in the United States. Our current analysis indicates that the Endurance International Group Incorporated is hosting several of the hate sites in this country. You know, this is, you know, very legalistic, inoffensively worded intimidation, right?
Right?
That's what this is. We want to bring these websites to your attention in advance of the report's publication so that you can review the sites in relation to your stated policies. Now, they never really reviewed my site. They just sent me two emails. They never did a review.
Which is terrible.
Yeah, right. Okay, continuing. If we have misinterpreted your terms of service, it doesn't say if we have misinterpreted the website.
Right.
Or if you have concluded that the content on these sites is not a violation of these terms, please let us know. So I don't know if the Kapowhib actually responded in any way, okay, except by terminating my website. ADL has been a leader in the fight against hate and extremism for almost a century, and we'll get into how they got into this business of demonizing their enemies.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, okay. But it just irks me that they can make this claim that they're against hate when it's okay to criminalize just about everybody else. When they can say really awful things about the Muslims, when they can say awful things about just
Christians.
About anybody they want, the Germans and everybody
right.
else.
Well, they hate the New Testament.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. They, you know, and they went against who was the Mel Gibson.
Right.
At the Passion of the Christ for a whole year before that movie came out. They were criticizing Mel Gibson, claiming that if this movie's released, there'll be anti-Semitic outrages committed all over the world, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, nothing like that happened.
But they still got him. They vilified
yeah.
him.
They right.
set him up with that woman.
Right.
Which was terrible. And I think they created his voice. I think they patterned his voice. And what he was supposed to have said on the phone was actually something that they created.
Yes. And he had the really horrible luck of being stopped by a Jewish patrol officer.
Uh-oh, yeah.
If those are there. That's really, what are the odds, right?
Yes.
What are the odds?
They saw him coming.
That's right. That's right. So continuing here, the spread of hate on the internet is a priority concern. And we have been working closely with other internet companies, including Google and Facebook, which are also owned by Jews, to explore strategies to combat hate while still protecting free speech.
And how are they doing that?
Right. Still protecting free speech principles and avoiding legal regulation. Well, yeah, they avoid legal regulation by intimidating and controlling the justice system of America. Continuing, as a reputable company in the internet industry, we urge you to enforce your published policies and abide by a high standard of corporate responsibility. The ADL welcomes the opportunity to work with you on developing programs for the online industry so we can control you even better.
Right.
That will foster better internet citizenship. Internet citizen. Well, what flowery language. And a safer user environment. We look forward to hearing from you. Sincerely, Deborah M. Lauder, Director of Civil Rights, and Robert Trestan, Project Director, Cyber Hate Response.
Wow.
So, Deanna, this is the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. That's what this is. Luke 12:1. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy.
Yes.
Yes. And, of course, hypocrisy in print has to be very carefully worded so as to appear righteous, right? To appear pious. That's what the Jews are specialists at. The rabbis of Judaism have made a profession out of this for the last 2,150 years. And I document that the origin on my website, which will be up eventually. I can't say how soon. But on my website, I have documented the history of the Jewish people, especially from the intertestamental period, how Antipater, the Edomite, bribed Julius Caesar to install his son Herod as the governor of Galilee. Once he was installed as governor of Galilee, he went and assassinated King Hyrcanus II and took over the country of Judah by assassination. Then he went and assassinated the entire Sanhedrin and replaced them with his Edomite cronies. Then he imported a priest from Babylon to take over the priesthood of Judea. I document all these things on my website, and these are precisely the type of things that the Jews, especially the rabbis, do not want Christians and the world at large to know and understand, because if the average Christian understood that the Jews are not Israelites at all, not Semites at all, not Hebrews at all, but in fact they are Canaanites and Edomites, then their whole charade, which is called Judaism, would collapse.
Right.
Right? So that's the reason why they listed my website first as being the most offensive, right?
Right.
But as I said...
And really, you have to ask yourself... And I think you've pointed that out, but you have to ask yourself, okay, specifically, what possible thing would they find objective on my website? Because your website is not hateful.
Oh,
but
it is?
As you say, you do have that that element of truth, and you have it pretty well laid out, and that really blows the whistle on them.
Right, right. And so... And the fact is, there is a lot of anti-Jewish material out on the internet. There's gobs and gobs of it, really, okay? But there's very, very few sites that have documented the origins of Judaism within the Canaanite, Edomite community as my website has. My website is the most scholarly on the subject.
Actually, okay? They did you a favor.
Well, yeah, by giving me publicity, right?
Right. Well, they've actually gave you credibility.
Yes.
Because see, they know this too. I mean, if you look in the in some of their early encyclopedias, they talk about the Khazar factor.
Right.
And but it's okay for them to talk about it, just as long as the goyim, the cattle, the people without the souls,
right.
As long as they don't find out about it.
Deanna, you don't have a soul?
Well, that's what I'm told.
Me, right? I think you got a lot of soul.
Well, that's what they say about us.
Right, right. That's what the rabbis teach about us, that we're cattle, we're goyim, we compared to Jews, we are less than human. And, you know, this is a type of nonsense that Jewry gets away with on a daily basis. And in fact, you know, what the Israeli rabbis say about us is even worse. You know, the Talmud is bad enough. But the Israeli rabbis teach that they can rightfully kill any Christian or any non-Jew they please preemptively if they deem that that person might be a threat, even an infant.
Wow.
This is what they actually teach.
Yes.
In the Israeli state. And you know, they've been expelling the black Hebrews, right?
Yes, they have.
They've been trying to become citizens in the Israeli state because they're black, right? And they publicly posture as being anti-racist.
Mm-hmm.
They are the most racist, xenophobic, supremacist people on the face of the earth.
Right. They only want multiculturalism in other countries, but not in theirs.
Isn't that more hypocrisy?
Yes.
That is. Now, in their letter here, they state that they've been in this business for the last 100 years. Okay?
Yes.
So let's investigate how the ADL came into being, the circumstances for the creation of the ADL. Okay, and this is the Leo Frank murder. And this is the incident, Leo Frank being a member of the New York Jewish community that moved down to Georgia and began working at a pencil factory as a manager and also as part owner. And while he was there, and I believe he is also a member of the B'nai B'rith, which is the Jewish secret society comparable to the Freemasons.
Right.
But even the Freemasons have been infiltrated largely by Jews, and a lot of the imagery of Freemasonry has Jewish imagery. I hesitate to call it Hebrew because it's Jewish. It's not Hebrew. There's a difference. Okay.
Right.
So the Leo Frank murder, Semitism Birthing Anti-Semitism, that's the title of this article, by Christian Gray, posted on April 5th, 2011. Okay, and here's what he has to say. The Leo Frank case is little known to the average American. Of course, the Jews hide this type of information from Americans constantly, right? Though its political and practical effects are felt today. The Frank incident is a microcosmic in that the events surrounding and following the trial typify a negative pattern of Jewish enculturation on European soil and the reasonable but castigated reaction by the settlers. In other words, the Jews invade the country and people get angry with them. That's why the Jews have been expelled from so many different countries throughout history. Okay. It is hoped that greater familiarity with this seemingly diminutive part of American history will do more, but not less than illumine the ignorant and the good and inert. And go the inert. Okay. The crime and trial. On April 27, 1913, the 13-year-old Mary Fagan was found dead in an Atlanta pencil factory, beaten, bludgeoned, raped, sodomized, and strangled by Jewish factory owner Leo Frank, also head of the local B'nai B'rith. Little Mary was an attractive white Christian girl who earned a weekly wage of $4.05 putting erasers on pencils. One Saturday, when the factory was calm due to a town parade, Confederate Memorial Day, Mary visited it one last time to retrieve her paycheck from Frank at his request. Next morning, factory watchman Newt Lee walked to the basement where he discovered Fagan's bloody body, a cord wrapped around her neck, her underwear lying loose around her throat, and bite marks on her skin. Her clothes were neatly cut, exposing her genitals and one breast, and other bodily signs indicated rape and molestation. The experts concluded that this was the work of a pervert. Frank was detained on April 29th and was indicted by a grand jury for murder on May 24th, 1913. Now, let me just quickly comment. World Jewry, and we're talking about the Oberjuden. I like to refer to them as the overpresence, the all-seeing eye, the international Jew. Is always aware of these goings on, and in any country where a prominent Jew has fallen into legal problems, world Jewry goes into action and does everything they can to exonerate that person, okay? Typically from behind the scenes, not publicly.
Right.
Okay? That's what happened in this case. Let me continue. Wielding his grand prosecuting skills, state solicitor Hugh Dorsey invoked powerful testimonies by Negro factory sweeper Jim Connolly and several female employees. Connolly told how Frank recruited him as a lookout while he violated Fagan, and how he asked him to help plant the body in the basement along with a forged murder note. He also stated that Frank told him that he would never go to jail for the crime because he has rich relatives in New York. Quote, "Why should I hang? I got wealthy people in Brooklyn," Frank told Caldy. Fagan's female co-workers reported that Frank would often visit their dressing rooms unexpected, watching them undress, and sometimes kissing and fondling them. A notable and recurring argument from the prosecution was that the defense refused to cross-examine the 20 girls who testified to Frank's immoral character. Dorsey relentlessly accentuated this point, even in his last speech to the jury. So this looks like an open and shut case, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
He got 20 witnesses, actually 21 witnesses, and explaining that this guy has a sexual harassment problem, and that even the people that he recruited to help him perform the murder testified against him. Okay? So here's what Dorsey has to say. The conduct of counsel in this case, as I stated, in failing to cross-examine, in refusing to cross-examine these 20 young ladies, refutes effectively and absolutely the claim of this defendant that he has good character. As I right, I'm a good Jew. As I said, if this man had had a good character, no power on earth could have kept him and his counsel from asking those girls where they got their information and why it was they said that this defendant was a man of bad character. Your common sense tells you that whenever a man can bring evidence and you know that he has got it and don't and doesn't do it, the strongest presumption arises against him. And you know, as 12 honest men seeking to get at the truth, that the reason these able counsel didn't ask those girls was because they dared not do it. Okay? So that's a good way to summarize your case, right?
Sure.
Now, to overcome the damaging character revelations of her client, Jew defense lawyers Luther Rosser and Arnold Rubin, in frantic reaction, attempted a race and pity tactic. After his failure to ensnare Coley on the witness stand, Rosner tried to dismiss his testimony with rash character slander.
Ah, isn't that the way they always do it?
Right, that's right. Here's what he said. Coley is a plain, beastly, filthy, lying nigger with a spreading nose through which probably tons of cocaine had been sniffed. That's what he said to the jury. Can you believe that?
You know, after learning about what some of the things that they do, yeah, I mean, that's how they operate.
Yeah, and who provided him with the cocaine?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Right? Okay. At one point during Dorsey's prevailing discourse, Frank's mother would stand up and slur Dorsey as a Christian dog.
Ah, how obvious can you be?
See, the Jews just love Christians.
Sure they do.
Isn't that what John Hagee tells them all the time?
All the time.
Because they're God's chosen, right?
Yes.
Sensing the inevitable, the defense called for a mistrial, citing anti-Semitism and jury manipulation. Well, if any was manipulating the jury, it was the Jews, right? Rosser lamented to the court that Frank was a lonely Jewish boy from the North without friends in the South. And boy, those little white girls look so good, with which he was unaccustomed. Okay, so he's a poor little Jewish boy, right?
Right.
And he just made a mistake, right? And in which he was defenseless and helpless. He was the factory manager, folks. Defenseless and helpless. Quote, I tell everybody that if Frank hadn't been a Jew, he never would have been prosecuted. We kind of hear that from blacks today who are guilty, right? I am asking my kind of people to give this man a fair play. Before I do a Jew injustice, I'd want my own throat cut from ear to ear. Somebody didn't oblige, right? As another basis for mistrial, Arnold claimed that the behavior of the spectators throughout the trial had been disgraceful. Well, apparently the Jew lady who criticized the prosecutor, her behavior was disgraceful. This was an overreaction to the judge's order to open the courtroom's windows to cool the excessive Georgian heat, which allowed the large town crowd outside to overhear and react to the trial.
Oh, my.
Therefore, like on TV, like the O.J. Simpson trial,
right?
Okay, but the desperation of the defense no more saved Frank than did his alleged innocence. Okay, here is an obviously open and shut case. Okay, let's see what happens. The verdict came on August 25th, 1913, and Leo Frank was found guilty of rape and murder. Now remember, he's the head of the local B'nai B'rith, which is a Jewish secret society.
Right.
You know, he was no small fry, lesser brethren, as the Jews like to refer to the Jews that don't count, right?
Right.
Following day, he was sentenced to hang on October 10th of the same year. The crowd of 5,000 that showed up to hear the verdict championed Dorsey as a hero and carried him through the streets on their shoulders for the South. This was more than a victory for Mary Fagan, but also a victory for the justice system. For decades following the War of Northern Aggression, justice had been scarce due to the North's disenfranchisement of the Southern man for his participation in the rebellion, as put in the illegally ratified 14th Amendment.
Right.
With victorious and righteous Frank's sentence, now the South could get what was right for a murderer without recourse to the Klan or lynch justice. Okay? The verdict was in. Hang him. Okay? But it was outside the courthouse that a more powerful and sinister campaign for Frank would be revealed. Can you guess what that sinister campaign was coming from?
Probably the media, because the Jews owned the media by then. What year was this? Was this 1909 or?
1913.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me get a... Before I misspeak, I'm pretty sure it was 1913. Yeah, yes, 1913. And the ADL letter said, we've been doing this for 100 years. Right? So it's just about 100 years. Okay, we're almost there, folks. It's almost 100 years of this disreputable criminal organization called the ADL, which was founded as a result of this atrocity. And the Jewish lobby trying to exonerate this guy and working behind the scenes to overturn a guilty verdict. Okay, the Jewish lobby. Throughout the trial, local Jews attacked the popular Atlanta newspaper, The Georgian, claiming it provided unfair coverage of the trial. Oh, man. Who provides the most unfair coverage in the world besides the Jewish lobby?
Indeed.
Local Rabbi David Marks traveled to New York to acquire support from other wealthy Jews. He complained that the Frank case was a modern Dreyfus case, and the evidence against Frank was but prejudice and perjury, repeating the defense's canard that the jury was intimidated. Okay. Right? The squawking of Marks, probably related to Karl Marx, the squawking of Marx and the Atlanta Jewish community was enough to provoke New York Jewish business influence to pull advertising from the Georgian.
Oh, yeah, the businessmen, the Jewish businessmen.
They've never done that before, have they, or since?
Yeah, basically.
Causing publisher William Randolph Hearst to flip to a pro-Frank stance. They don't influence the media at all, do they?
No.
The Georgian capitulated to Jewish threats by creating a columnist called the Old Police Reporter, who would solely write about the trial, thus attempting to propagandize and revise the conscience of the people. Jewish propaganda. Didn't Paul tell us to beware of Jewish fables? Continuing. While in New York, Marx had successful meetings with powerful Jews, Adolf Ochs, O-C-H-S, publisher of widely read New York Times, and Louis Marshall of the American Jewish Committee. Prior to the Frank incident, Ochs had been opposed to using his Times as a vehicle of Jewish advocacy. In fact, this stance earned him the reputation among Jews as a non-Jewish Jew. But despite warnings from both his Atlanta beat writer and the editor of Georgia's The Macon Telegraph that it would be detrimental to unite under around Frank as Jews, Ochs acquiesced and began a national news campaign editorializing for Frank as innocent and against Georgia as anti-Semitic.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so here's the Jewish media getting involved, you know, telling lies, creating propaganda, and basically smearing the innocent, as they always do.
And basically going against the whole state of Georgia.
That's right. But the fact that they were able to intimidate William Randolph Hearst, that's incredible, because he was already very rich.
Right.
Okay. In the end, no paper wrote more pro-Frank stories than the Times, thus laying a large part of Frank's fate on the shoulders of Ochs. So anybody who reads the New York Times, or the Jew York Times, is basically accepting Jewish propaganda day and night. That's all that rag is full of. Lewis Marshall, an unabashed Jewish advocate, was concerned with blowback caused by Jewish advocacy for Frank and advised manipulating other non-Jewish papers to write pro-Frank stories, right? Well, it would be bad if we're only Jewish newspapers are praising Frank. It'd be nice if some quote-unquote Gentile newspapers did the same. That way we wouldn't stand out so much, right? This would offer the illusion that the local papers reflected popular beliefs, thus exonerating Jews from any notions that they centralized the effort. He wrote to the IJC board member Irving Lehman, "There is only one way of dealing with this matter, and that is in a quiet, unobtrusive manner, that is, behind the scenes, to bring influence to bear on the Southern press, to create a wholesome public opinion which will free this unfortunate young man from the terrible judgment which rests against him." Okay, folks, this is how the Jews operate. They have not ceased operating in this manner up to date, okay? Some papers began to suggest that Frank did not get a fair trial due to his religion. Gee,
it's,
Christians never
it's
get
it's due to his slaughter and what he did to that poor girl.
That's
I mean,
right.
Where is justice for her? This is
terrible.
See,
the Jews don't care about us.
They don't
We're
care.
Going.
Exactly.
We're cattle. Yeah. And so whenever one of their own, especially a high-ranking Jew, like the leader of the B'nai B'rith in Georgia, gets arrested, you know, they're going to bring all of their corrupt influence to bear on every possible, you know, official they can. Right?
Right.
So some papers began to suggest that Frank did not get a fair trial due to his religion, and others openly called for an indictment of Connally for the crime. Okay?
Oh,
the black janitor.
Right.
This disinformation drive prompted the jury to openly renounce as baseless the charges that their judgment was based on prejudice or fear. So the jury came out publicly and said, these charges are baseless. It led Dorsey to argue powerfully against the same. Responding to Frank's attorney's request for a new trial, Dorsey told the judge, "The people were not aroused against Leo M. Frank because he is a Jew, but because he is a criminal of the worst type. In the name of the Gentiles of Atlanta, I declare that when the counsel for the defense charges at the jury with bias and charges Atlantans with intimidating the jury with a display of mob spirit, they are slandering the citizenship of the entire community." Amen. On October 31st, 1913, Judge L.S. Roane denied the motion for a new trial. As Frank's lawyers made plans to unsuccessfully appeal the case to the Supreme Court of Georgia, organized Jewry continued to rework public opinion about Frank. So in other words, they reinvent Frank as this poor, victimized Jew, right? A few weeks later, Jews Jacob Schiff.
Wow.
Okay. The Jacob Schiff.
Right.
Direct Rothschild agent got involved, and Albert Lasker entered the fray. Schiff was perhaps the most powerful Jew in America, the managing partner of the merchant banking house of Kuhn, Loeb & Company. He and the AJC committee, which would be the American Jewish Committee, met at a New York temple and agreed to hire Lasker, a wealthy advertising tycoon from Chicago who had the reputation for detesting anti-Semitism. So apparently a Gentile, but maybe he's also Jewish. We'll see. Lasker was able to pool together $3,000, the equivalent of $67,000 today, for the Frank cause, split among himself, his father, and Jew Julius Rosenwald, chairman of the Sears, Roebuck & Company.
Wow.
We're talking about some powerful Jews getting involved in the Mary Fagan case.
Well, Albert Lasker was a manager to the Seagram's Distilling Corporation.
Okay.
And he was a big PR guy.
Yeah, so he's obviously Jewish then. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It doesn't say here that he's Jewish in the article. Anyway, Lasker would personally end up putting $100,000 over $2.2 million today in the fight for Frank. With the help of Ox and his Times, The Jew juggernaut for Frank was making speed. But as the publicity campaign for Frank became pervasive, it also became noticeably Jewish, and any anti-Semitism that would develop in Georgia was a direct result of Semitism. Well said. Well said. So the reaction against the Jews is typically what the Jews do, right?
Right.
Lasker hired William J. Burns, the world's highest paid detective, for $4,500, which would be over $100,000 today, to come to Georgia and investigate the case. This coincided nicely with the phrase from Frank's lips, quote, "The truth is on the march," which began feverishly circulating in headlines. Okay, in other words, the Jewish slander campaign is on the march. The New York Times dubbed Burns the greatest detective, certainly, and perhaps the only really great detective, the only detective of genius whom this country has produced.
Oh,
which
my.
Is kind of putting down the rest of them, isn't it?
Sure. But isn't that what they do? I mean, right. They are the chosen people, you know.
Right. And that gives them the right to slander anybody. Okay?
Sure.
Burns' entry into the campaign and his subsequent unscrupulous activities would awaken Tom Watson, a lawyer and a brilliant polemicist who acquired the nickname the Sage of McDuffie County. As the editor of the Jeffersonian in Atlanta, Watson spoke for Georgians, the overwhelming majority of whom wanted Frank to hang. As E. Michael Jones writes, Watson seemed not only capable but willing to articulate the questions on everyone's mind. Watson began by asking, who's paying for all this?
Aha! Okay. Good question.
And who benefits?
Yes.
Who's paying and who benefits? Does a Jew expect extraordinary favors and immunities because of his race?
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the defendant is taking that position. Anyone who has noticed the New York papers has noticed the persistent efforts made from Atlanta to arouse the Hebrews. Of course, that's a misrepresentation. The Jews are not Hebrews.
Right.
Into believing that Frank is a victim of race prejudice. It is wise for the Jews to risk the good, or is it wise for the Jews to risk the good name and the popularity of the whole race in the extraordinary, extrajudicial, and utterly unprecedented methods that are being worked to save this decadent offshoot of a great people? Well, there's more than one decadent offshoot of this people, right? And the Bible says they're not great. It says they're small. According to his associate, Burns would begin his work on the Fagan murder by working day and night directing detectives and securing affidavits on Frank's behalf. But in fact, Burns was using his money to bribe witnesses to recant their sworn testimonies. So much for being a great detective.
Oh my goodness.
Right? Right? Local pastor Reverend C.B. Ragsdale withdrew his statement that he heard Connolly confess to the murder. After the Jews
paid him
used
off.
Their intimidation and bribery tactics, right?
Yes.
Maintaining that an agent of Burns paid him to do so.
Yes.
Okay. Proactively, Dorsey put Burns on the stand where the detective admitted that he removed one witness from Atlanta so that the prosecution could not question her. Right? Okay. We don't want any more witnesses against our pet Jew here.
Of course not.
Yeah. Burns also claimed that he promised another witness a job for his retracted testimony with the threat that the Jews would get him should he fail to comply.
Oh my.
This is what Jews are like, folks. You better find out now before it's too late. Dorsey uncovered other examples of witness tampering, such as the discovery that one of the factory girls was promised money to sign an affidavit repudiating her testimony as to Frank's debauched character. Right? Okay.
And you know, if he did it to one girl, how many other girls that worked in that plant did he do that with that he didn't murder?
That's right. That's right. And the Jews get away with this constantly because of their money. The Jews and their money, right?
Well, you know, it isn't just the money. I used to work in the textile industry, which is dominated by the Jews. I was a representative. I worked for between 5 to 7 companies. I was an independent rep. And I worked with a lot of Jewish men.
Okay.
And these Jewish men, most of them were married, but honest to Pete, they were immoral.
Uh-huh.
Amoral.
Their hands on you, right?
No, they did not.
Oh, no?
Their,
they did not do
their
that?
Filthy hands on me. They
okay.
attempted to.
Okay.
They propositioned
right.
me.
Okay.
And they were shocked when I refused to
yeah.
accommodate them.
Right.
And the other thing about them is that they cheated me constantly.
Yes.
In my commission. I was a commission only rep. And honestly, they just cheated me all the time.
Right. Yeah, this is what Jews do. In fact, always take is the Jewish motto for business.
Yes.
Right? Always take.
Yes.
Right. Samuel Roth wrote a book about Jewish business practices. And he revealed how they, you know, can bankrupt Christian companies, blindside them with lawsuits, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And, you know, they do this constantly. You know, and they really, at this point in history, have taken over virtually every corporation on the planet. You know, good corporations that used to be owned by Christians and, you know, and secular corporations, you know, they either buy them out or, you know, like the Chick-fil-A fiasco that's going on right now. Okay?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mayor Rahm Emanuel swore that Chick-fil-A will never have a franchise in Chicago as long as he's mayor.
Well, that's what they installed that guy for.
Right, right. But all the CEO of Chick-fil-A said was, well, you know, we don't believe in homosexuality, but, you know, we don't turn homosexuals away if they're customers.
Of course
right?
not.
So why should that upset Rahm Emanuel? What he just said is a total violation of the Constitution. Right?
Right. But they don't care about that kind of thing. And that's what they were installed for, was to perpetuate their agenda, which is a cultural destruction agenda.
Right.
You know, just destroy. Well, I mean, they've been doing that for years.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, there's a reason why the Jews have been thrown out of virtually every country in history.
Right.
You know, that's because of their very aggressive, usurious tactics, which are aimed at taking control of the economy and then ultimately the society of whatever country they inhabit. Okay? And in fact, anybody who's interested in this subject, I really encourage people to read up on the Marranos.
All right, yeah.
Marranos are the Spanish Jews who infiltrated the Catholic Church in Spain, took over most of the businesses, because working with usury and getting people in debt bankrupts the people who are in debt.
Right.
Just like America, right?
Right. Well, Christopher Columbus was a Marrano.
Yes, yeah. Although he was not a conspirator. He was just, you know, he got the commission from...
He was a mass murderer.
Well, yeah, well, but he was not in conspiracy with the Jews who even tried to kill him. He was on his own, okay? So, and a lot of these Jewish merchants were slave owners.
Sure.
Okay, and the media never says anything about Jewish slave owners, okay?
Of course not.
Yes, and the Israeli state, even today, permits slavery. It's called sex slavery. They import women from Eastern Europe, poor women, white women from Eastern Europe, take their passports away, and force them to work in the sex industry in the Israeli state.
Right. They also are into organ transfer, harvesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are the kinds of things the Jews are known for outside of their own press.
Right.
They never report these things in their own press. That's why wherever they have settled, the first thing they do is they take control of the money, then they take control of the press, then they take control of the entertainment, and then they take control of the educational establishment, and so on down the line.
Right.
That's what they always do. They did that in Germany,
right,
the Weimar Republic, before Hitler. And many historians said, well, if it weren't for the Versailles Treaty, the very awful terms of the Versailles Treaty, Hitler probably would have never happened. And that's really a good assessment, because it was because of the and the Versailles Treaty was dictated by Jews.
Right.
Okay. It was dictated by Jews. And so they punished Germany for a war they did not start.
Yep.
Okay? And that led to a reaction by the German people who realized that the Jews were stealing from them.
And they realized it basically from the 1870s forward.
Yes. Yeah, and Hitler was just, accentuating what they already knew. Okay? Right. And so what was really going on, folks, is that the Jews took over the Weimar Republic, turned it into a debauched society, right? Putting on sex shows in Berlin and, on the night obscene, drinking, carousing, totally demoralizing the German people, as they have done today to America. The exact same thing. They did it to Spain in the days of Queen Isabella, and that's why Queen Isabella expelled the Jews from Spain. That's why. And there's no other reason. She was not an anti-Semite. She had good reason for doing what she did, and many Jews admit this in their writings. So you can consult Jewish authors on the Marranos, and they will admit this, that the Jews were responsible for their own expulsion. Okay? So, on April 23, 1914, Watson had sounded the horn when the front page of the Jeffersonian read, quote, "How much longer will the people of Atlanta endure the lawless doings of William J. Burns? What right has this sham detective to tamper with the witnesses that told the truth on Leo Frank, that foul degenerate who murdered little Mary Fagan?" That's quite a headline. Right? Burns and his team were convicted of suborning witnesses, and Burns' license was revoked by the Atlanta City Council. So far, justice has been served, right, Deanna?
I'm still worried about Mary Fagan. I think
Right,
that
right. Yeah, Mary Fagan. Well, the Jews don't care about Mary Fagan.
I know, but I, that is a terrible thing.
And this is how it works. It works even so today. You probably remember the what was it, the Leopold and Loeb case here in Chicago.
Well, I don't remember it, but
Right, but
I
yeah.
read about it years later.
Right. Well, it's another one of those stories that the Jews cover up. They totally cover up where two Jewish murderers, they actually murdered another Jewish boy. Okay, so it was two Jews murdering another Jew. And so the Jewish community was actually relieved by the fact that the victim was Jew, right? Because they didn't want another Mary Fagan situation on their hands, right? Okay, so his license was revoked. Continuing, news for Frank worsened when on June 6, 1914, 4 months after the Georgia Supreme Court denied the motion for a new trial, the Fulton County Superior Court rejected another motion to set aside Frank's guilty verdict. But a common pattern continued. Where legal recourse failed them, the Jews' propaganda machine marched on. Albert Lasker then hired Montana muckraker lawyer Christopher Powell Connolly to write Frank's story. The Frank case, which appeared in Collier's Weekly, December of 1913, as an 18,000-word article. It was eventually published in 1915 as a book under the title The Truth About the Frank Case. Connolly, in no uncertain terms, framed this piece with the presumption of Georgian anti-Semitism and employed multiple appeals to pity. In the foreword, he predisposes his readers. There is but one reason, aside from the peculiarly atrocious murder of Mary Fagan, which made possible the injustice on Frank. Atlanta is still practically untouched by the flow of migration from Europe, which has made our northern cities so tolerant.
Oh my.
No Jews, right? The Jews
Sure.
have not yet migrated into Atlanta, which has made our northern cities so tolerant in matters of race and religion. Yeah, sure. The Jews are tolerant.
Right.
You stinking break. It is ridiculous to protest that there has been no prejudice against the Jew in this Frank case. The whole atmosphere of the case reeks with it. You cannot make the Jew have any respect for these protests. He knows the storm when he sees it. Centuries of oppression have made him weather-wise, right? Non-existent oppression. The Jew has always been the oppressor. It's never been vice versa. Though tendentious and directed by Lasker, Connolly's article was largely responsible for stirring national sympathy for Frank, as well as inflaming sentiments that Georgia and its citizens were involved in an anti-Semitic persecution of the innocent Frank. Lasker wrote to a friend, "Outside the state of Georgia, the press of the United States, including the leading papers of every city in the South, are editorially agitating public sentiment for the unfortunate Frank. Daily, hundreds of papers are editorially crying that Frank's execution would amount to judicial murder." Now I ask you, Deanna, is there any other group, ethnic group in America, that has the ability to take total control of the press and orchestrate such a campaign?
No. And you know something else? Albert Lasker's wife was involved with Margaret Sanger.
Really?
In what is called the Negro Project.
Wow.
And
very tolerant.
Yes. And this was also Clarence Gamble of Procter & Gamble was also involved. And they created what is called a National Negro Advisory Council.
Right.
And basically they developed, the same group of people developed the NAACP.
Which I refer to as the National Association for the Advancement of the Chosen People.
Yes.
It has never helped the blacks.
Never.
It has helped a few, the ones who were put in charge, right? But the NAACP did not have a black CEO until, well into the 1960s.
I think it was like 79 even.
79? Okay. So the NAACP has always been run by Jews,
mm-hmm.
and the blacks are simply, you know, window dressing at
right.
the NAACP. Always have been. Okay. Continue. One example of Connolly's biased but unfortunately persuasive article is the origin of the likely engineered phrase, "Kill the Jew or we'll kill you," that would become a popular slogan in pro-Frank newspapers. Now, as if the people in Atlanta were chanting this phrase, which they were not. Okay?
Yeah.
Yes. There is currently a chant in South Africa called "Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer," but the Jew News doesn't popularize that. Continuing. Connolly claims that on his last day in Atlanta, when he was visiting one of Frank's lawyers, when the phone rang, "If they don't hang that Jew, we'll hang you," blurted the voice on the other end. As Oney writes, the world was now wholeheartedly in the defense camp. Though one Georgian paper heavily jousted with Watson's Jeffersonian, within the state itself, a near universal resentment toward Jews solidified as the people perceived that Jewish-owned newspapers were hoodwinking the nation with their harassment of Georgia and fearless lobbying for Frank. So only the people of Georgia understood what was going on.
Right.
Thomas Loyless, editor of the Augusta Chronicle, had inveighed against the writings of Watson and would later argue for a mitigated penalty for Frank. But at one point, even he used his paper to accuse Ox and the Times of slandering Georgians. Later appeared in Loyless' paper, former Governor Joseph Brown asked, "Are we to understand that anybody except a Jew can be punished for a crime?"
Yes.
Let me ask this question again. Are we to understand that anybody except a Jew can be punished for a crime?
Apparently so.
That's right. On February 25, 1915, the case was taken to the United States Supreme Court. Content with the same jury intimidation argument, Marshall told the court, "This court has said that there must be a trial before a competent tribunal. A competent tribunal is one that holds the scales of justice impartially. That is not swayed by fear or favor. Here the trial was marked by prejudice and hostility. Jeers at counsel for Frank were permitted when they lost a point. The crowd almost trespassed upon the jury box." No, they were standing outside. "Hanging over the jury box, and their whispers were heard throughout the courtroom." What a ridiculous statement. Absolute, you know, absolute
right.
lie.
Yeah.
Okay, not unlike the lower court, this one appeared equally aware of the furtive efforts of the defense. Chief Justice Edward Douglas White, former Confederate soldier, asked, quote, "Is it your argument that in a jury trial where the accused is not present, has not been heard, and the trial has been illegal, he must go free?" The justices upheld the denial of Frank's petition for a new trial by a vote of 7-2, while rejecting all arguments from Frank's attorneys. Now, that's when we had non-Jewish Supreme Court justices.
Right. Yes.
Today, we have four Jewish Supreme Court justices.
Yes.
With the defense's final resort exhausted, organized jury's last route was to persuade Governor Slayton to commute Frank's sentence. Okay? We were expecting this, weren't we?
Terrible. The
effects of injustice. Obstinate and determined wealthy local Jews and Georgian publisher William Randolph Hearst met with Governor John Marshall Slayton, who interestingly worked for the same law firm as the Jew defense attorneys. Their goal was to campaign for Frank's pardon or commutation. With the editorial help of Jew-owned papers in New York, systematic jury assembled massive national letter-writing and petitioning campaign from U.S. senators, state governors, and citizens to Governor Slayton, demanding him to commute Frank's death sentence. Bombarded with over 100,000 letters and 2 million petitions, on Sunday, June 20th, 1915, the day before his term as governor ended...
He did it.
You remember what I said about Bill Clinton?
He did it, yes.
He freed Mark Rich.
Yes.
As he was leaving office.
And I bet that Obama will do it to Pollard.
Yeah, it might. You know. Mm-hmm. But there's so many Jewish criminals out there, he'd have to pardon about 10,000.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see what Obama does. If he gets reelected, that'll be postponed for another 4 years.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Bombarded with over 100,000 letters and 2 million petitions on Sunday, June 20, 1915, the day before his term as governor ended, Slayton commuted Frank's sentence to life in prison.
Okay, so here's the question. Who wrote all those letters and those petitions?
That's a good question. Well, see, this is what organized Jewry is capable of. All
yes.
of the synagogues, all of the Jewish women's societies, the ADL, all of them. You know, there's hundreds of them. And they're all controlled from the top by, here in America, it would be B'nai B'rith. And at this point, it would be American Jewish Committee. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have all these Jewish committees, and of course today the most powerful is AIPAC, the American Israel Political Action Committee. I forget what the PAC stands for. They changed the wording.
It's very interesting. That is not just one group. That is a combination of groups. That is a composition of groups that are all over the country.
Right. That's why they can put pressure on every newspaper in the country to favor Frank. And they
right.
do this constantly. Right?
And, I hear people all the time say, well, I know a really good Jew down the street, and
right.
they're just not like that at all. But when push comes to shove, and when they want all the Jews to unite against a certain threat or what
right.
they perceive as a threat, they will unite together. It does
yes,
not matter.
Yes, and it's even worse than that because they have the Sayanim, S-A-Y-A-N-I-M, which is the Jewish term for spies, for spies that the ADL and other Jewish groups employ to spy on other American citizens, which is illegal, yet they do it anyway. And you have to understand, Deanna, that some of these Jews are very much willing to do this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But other Jews, relent because they're afraid that they'll be persecuted.
Or ostracized. They don't want to be ostracized.
Right, right. Or their business destroyed.
Sure.
Yeah,
and I think that you look at Facebook and you look at some of the other online social sites, that's what all of this is about, so that they can spy on people who
that's
are dumb
right.
enough to give them all that information. Personal
right.
information.
Yeah. And so this is the beginning of the ADL tactic, which they still employ today. And they're much more sophisticated today. They have much more power.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They have infiltrated the legal community, the law enforcement community, and the judges. The media, they control all those things now, and especially the police community, which, because they hold seminars training police officers to be on the lookout for anti-Semites, don't you know?
Yes.
Okay. So, the following Monday morning, a newsboy was heard yelling, "Frank's sentence is commuted by Slayton." Naturally, the town was morally outraged. That afternoon, Slayton released to the press his statement that he believed Connolly was the murderer. Oh my
Oh my
God.
gosh.
Can you believe this?
I yes,
They got the
unfortunately.
governor not only to commute the sentence, but to testify?
Yeah.
To testify, I guess, right? "Feeling as I do about this case, I would be a murderer if I allowed that man to hang." All
Oh
right.
my gosh.
"I would rather be plowing in a field than to feel that the rest of my life that I had that man's blood on my hands." So obviously somebody wrote him this script. Okay.
Yes.
Now, after dusk, a 2,000-man armed mob marched towards Slayton's mansion, chanting, "Pay the governor a call." Okay.
Oh
Vigilante
my.
justice, folks. In Mary Fagan's hometown of Marietta, the governor was hanged in effigy on the courthouse square beneath a placard which read, "John M. Slayton, King of the Jews."
Whoa, oh my word.
And traitor governor of Georgia. With the help of the state militia, Slayton escaped and fled to New York,
Where had
which
good Jewish friends?
today'd be, where would he flee to today?
Yes.
The bandit state of Israeli, right?
Yes.
Slayton escaped and fled to New York, where he was received by Jews at the Waldorf Astoria and crowned for his dishonor, much like Hugh Dorsey was heralded by Georgians for his nobility. Slayton would be gone in 3 months. Following a week in Manhattan, the Slaytons would repair to the Adirondacks, then travel to Chicago and on to Alaska via the Canadian Rockies. From there, they would journey to San Francisco. After taking the Pan-Pacific Exhibition, they would hop down the coast to San Simeon, where they would once again be the guests of the Hearst family.
Oh my gosh.
They finally wound up in Hawaii. Okay. On the day Slayton commuted the sentence, 150 Mariettans met at Fagan's grave to form the Knights of Mary Fagan and vowed to avenge the girl's blood. A few days later, Watson's first article following the commutation appeared and further galvanized all who coveted true justice for little Mary Fagan. A few samples from the article typify some of the strongest fury and invective that he had unleashed on George's enemies. So, quoting, "Our grand old empire state has been raped. We have been violated, and we are ashamed. Our system stood like Jackson. It was a stone wall. Jew money has debased us, bought us, and sold us, and laughs at us." There was
Indeed.
one honest reporter.
Yes.
Okay. Now, here's the result. Watson's sentiments were echoed by the people of Georgia, who were seething with vexation and resentment, the kind of displeasure that inevitably seeks a reciprocating release. In prophetic crescendo, Watson later wrote, "Let the rich Jews beware. The next Jew who does what Frank did is going to get exactly the same thing that we give to Negro rapists." That same week, former Governor Joseph Brown would write in the Macon Telegraph another foretelling line: "The time had come for the people to form mobs." Indeed, it had. On August 17, 1915, Frank was seized from the Milledgeville prison by an armed mob, transported to a wood near Marietta, and hanged. Watson, "Let Jew libertines take notice. Georgia is not for sale to rich criminals."
Wow.
Okay?
Good for them.
Now, of course, this is vigilante justice. And vigilante justice today is frowned upon. However, when you have criminals running the court system, criminals running the legal profession, criminals directing the police force, and this kind of thing goes on daily, folks, thanks to the Jewish takeover of America. That's what's happening in America, and it's 100 times, it's 1 million times worse today, because white people are being sacrificed on the altar of political correctness. The Jew media does not report white women being raped daily, white people being murdered and attacked and brutalized daily by non-whites. That's not news. The crimes committed against whites outnumber crimes committed against blacks by 900 to 1.
Wow.
Yet it's not reported. There is a silent campaign of genocide going on against the white race by international Jewry, and I've been trying to bring this issue to the forefront of people who just don't know what's going on. And this is what's going on in America, folks. In South Africa, the black regimes in South Africa and Zimbabwe are deliberately targeting white farmers for extermination, brutally killing them and leaving their bodies to rot in their homes. And in some cases, the white people are evicted and the farms are being given to blacks who simply let those farms go to waste because they don't know how to farm. And this is what's going on in the world today, folks. White people need to understand that they are the victims of silent genocide.
True.
It's not being reported. It's not, and very, very few white people understand the scale and the scope of the criminality. But last year in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we had a black flash mob attack white people minding their old business, and they ruined Milwaukee Fest because of incidents like this. They would simply come up and attack white people, pull them out of their cars, knock them off their motorcycles. In one case, even a little baby was attacked.
Oh my.
And the Jewish press says nothing about it.
Right.
Just like the Mary Fagan case. It's 100 times, 100,000 times worse than the Mary Fagan case, folks. This is what's going on in the world today.
Right.
Right? So this man, as the author said, this is a little known aspect of American history, and the Jews want it that way.
Of course. And that's why they want to corrupt all of our history. That's why they are in charge of the publishing companies. That's why they are in charge of the media. That's why they are in charge of the educational apparatus in this country, so that they can corrupt our history, so that they can alter our history, so that we don't learn any of these things that we really need to know. Because if we know our history, then we can more accurately perceive what is going on today.
Right.
And that's
right.
Certainly not what they want us to understand, yeah, or to acknowledge.
Right. And as a historian for my people, Israel, and by Israel I mean the Anglo-Saxon Caucasian people, who are the migrating 12 tribes, which began, migration began 745 BC, fully documented on my website, which is currently down.
Right.
I have a slideshow depicting all of these events, both from biblical sources and historical sources, proving that our ancestors went from the old, what is today called Armenia, across the Caucasus Mountains, the pass, the narrow pass that goes across the Caucasus Mountains is still today referred by the locals as the Pass of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Those people spoke Hebrew, they did not eat pork, and they circumcised their boys after 8 days. And they use a knife that's called a celt.
Hmm.
Okay? That's probably the source word for the word celt. All right? It was a stone, very sharp stone knife called a celt. Okay? And these people left gravestones and graves with Hebrew inscriptions on the gravestones. These people are our ancestors. They refer to themselves as God's people, which in the language that they wound up speaking, because they were held captive by the Assyrians, and they spoke more of a Syrian slash Aramaic language than Hebrew, the language which they called themselves was Gautai, which means God's people. Okay? And the Celts, the Goth, and that was changed to Goth. Okay,
oh, uh-huh.
So the Gautai, God's people, are now known as the Goths, and the various tribes of Israel wandered up into the European wilderness, and most of those rivers were named by the tribe of Dan, such as the Danube River, the Don River, okay, etc., etc. All of this is documented on my website, and this is the real reason why the Jews want my website down, because I prove through total scholarship that the Jewish people are imposters. They have no claim to the name of Israel whatsoever. The vast majority of Jews today are of Khazar extraction, 95% of none of whose ancestors ever set foot in Palestine.
Right.
Okay. So who are these people to invade Palestine and start slaughtering these innocent, defenseless Palestinian people?
And destroying 500 of their towns and cities.
Yes.
Taking over their land.
Yes.
Slaughtering their children.
Yes.
Many of whom are Christian.
That's right. That's right. And the Judeo-Christians of America simply turn a blind eye. I was getting ready to say turn the other cheek, but that's
not what they do.
No. They turn a blind eye.
They surely do.
Right. Okay. Now I want to bring this up to date. I think we have about a half hour left. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And this is a story about how the ADL operates today. Okay. And this is the title of this article is ADL didn't do anything wrong and promises never to do it again. Okay. This is doublespeak from the Jews.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. That's the way they term things.
Even though this case, they got fined for spying on, I told you, the Sionim are Jews, civilian Jews, who spy for the ADL and for the Mossad and for other Jewish agencies, okay? And I'd say most of them don't actually get paid for it, but it's kind of like, you know, in Jewish culture, you're expected to do this. When you're called upon for your tribe and you don't do it, well, you know, there would be repercussions, okay? But some of these Jews, being supremacists themselves, do it willingly, you know, and even joyously. But this article is by Rachel Marshall. The Anti-Defamation League, which last spring was found in possession of illegally obtained information on Arab Americans, members of the anti-apartheid movement, and other political and human rights activists will not face criminal charges, the San Francisco District Attorney's Office announced on November 15th. Roy Bullock, let's see, I'm trying to get the year of this. 1994. Roy Bullock, ADL's longtime undercover agent, was also absolved of any crime. Bullock had supplied ADL with confidential police and motor vehicle records provided by retired San Francisco police officer Tom Girard, who was indicted last May on charges of conspiracy and concealing government documents. Now, I'll bet all the Goyim went to jail and all the Jews got off, right? In return for having the charges dropped, ADL agreed to contribute. I guess this is an after-the-fact bribe. Up to $50,000 toward a reward fund for hate crimes, but only for hate crimes not committed by Jews, right?
Right.
And to spend another $25,000 on a program to teach school children about the evils of violence and discrimination. What about the evils of bribery and intimidation and concocting false evidence against people?
Well, that doesn't count.
No.
They're doing it, so it's okay.
So whatever they were exonerated for, their after-the-fact bribe went to some completely different cause. Completely different cause, okay? All of the files seized by police from ADL and Bullock will be returned to them except for the documents obtained from Girard. Although ADL officials Abraham Foxman and Melvin Salberg crowed that the district attorney's decision confirms our consistent position that ADL has engaged in no misconduct of any kind, the organization also agreed to a permanent civil injunction barring it from receiving classified information from any state or local employee who is prohibited from sharing it. Well, Deanna, the police are not allowed to share their information with anybody.
Exactly.
Anytime.
Exactly.
Right. The ADL was caught doing this, and they promised never to do it again. Do you believe they have kept their promise?
Of course not.
Of course not. They're the ADL. They're God's chosen people. All of the files, okay, has engaged no misconduct, okay? In other words, ADL is perfectly innocent but had the promise never to do it again.
Right.
Okay. Outraged but not surprised. Members of organizations targeted by ADL's spy operation were outraged but not surprised by the district attorney's lack of backbone. In late October, a coalition of nearly 100 groups spied on by ADL held a press conference to denounce what they correctly predicted would be a lenient settlement. Members of the Coalition Against Surveillance said that they had been told by anonymous sources that a sweetheart deal was in the making and called it, quote, a great disservice to the thousands of victims of the ADL spy operation, unquote. Christine Toda, Secretary of the Arab American Caucus of the California Democratic Party, said the settlement made a mockery of the justice system. You can bet that if it was an Arab American organization that behaved this way, it would have been tried, prosecuted, and hung. On November 17th, 2 days after the decision was announced, 20 members of the coalition walked to ADL's San Francisco office to ask for a conference with ADL officials. When they were not allowed to enter, the group asked if two of their members could talk with someone from the organization or make an appointment for a later date. ADL's response was to call the police, who, when they arrived, went inside in an unsuccessful attempt to arrange a meeting between ADL and the coalition. Now, that was a very good thing for these police officers to do.
Sure.
Right? They tried to arrange a meeting. Okay. Alan Solomonoff, Middle East Program Director for the American Friends Service Committee and a member of the coalition's coordinating committee, called the settlement a result of immense pressure brought to bear on the district attorney. He pointed out that since last spring, high-level ADL officers had met repeatedly with city officials in an effort to forestall an indictment. Letters and phone calls from ADL supporters in the community added to the pressure, as did a massive public relations campaign portraying ADL as a defender of human rights and the investigation as an attack on the entire Jewish community. Doesn't this sound exactly like the Mary Fagan case?
Yes, absolutely.
Have they changed?
They have not changed from day one.
They have not. And the American people know nothing about their tactics and how much power they have. According to the San Francisco Examiner, ADL's major tactic in negotiations with the district attorney was to emphasize the legal deficiencies of a possible case, right? Just like they did with Mary Fagan. All right. A battery of ADL lawyers was prepared to challenge the legality of the police searches of the organization's offices, and they questioned the prosecution's ability to prove that ADL officials and Bullock had criminal knowledge when they accepted information from Garage. So in other words, their tactic was to be, well, we didn't know anything about it beforehand. Gerard just, you know, gave it to us later, or somebody gave it to us. This was going to be their tactic. Now, I can imagine, Deanna, that when you have a battery of lawyers and you can file, you know, one phony brief after another, you could tie up the legal system for months, if not years. Okay?
Certainly.
Yeah. But here again, witnesses, enormous numbers of witnesses testified against them, and yet nothing was done.
Amazing.
Just like the Mary Fagan case. Now, where was the Ku Klux Klan? Another problem for the prosecution was ADL's insistence that as an organization engaged in journalism, it was protected by state laws guaranteeing press freedom. Wow.
Yes.
So, assuming that we're press, Deanna, if we start making illegal searches and seizures of people's property without their knowledge, what would happen to you and me?
Oh.
Right?
Yes.
Right? We're press.
Yes, you're right. We are.
Yeah. We're informing the public of things they need to know.
Right.
If we did something like this, you and I would be, you know, charged, indicted, and you know, imprisoned in a heartbeat. and they've done that exactly that to many people, to many people,
Right.
and railroading them, okay? With an annual budget of $32 million, ADL could afford to drag out the case forever.
Oh my.
But in the end, political considerations were the deciding factor. District Attorney Arlo Smith didn't think it was politically expedient to dump on the ADL. All right. To prosecute the ADL,
Of
right?
course not.
A source in
Because
the
they're
D.
such a good group and they've
Hey.
done so much good in the world.
Yes, that's so much good. You know, we shouldn't dump on these criminals.
Of course not.
We shouldn't dump on the mafia. A source in the DA's office said after the settlement was announced, Smith has all but declared he will run for California Attorney General in the next election against incumbent Republican Dan Lundgren. Kind of like the opposite of the case with the governor of Georgia, right?
Right,
So
yeah.
instead of leaving and exonerating the Jew criminal, they promised him, "Well, we'll back you for governor."
Right, right.
Right? Okay.
Well, don't they always back politicians? Isn't that how they work?
And typically they back both sides,
Right.
unless the opposition is clearly against them. You're right.
Right. That if you can, well, Lenin said, if we control both sides of an issue, we can handle the result. We can manage the result. So.
Right. That's in the protocols of the Elders of Zion as well.
Right.
Okay. Anybody who says to me that the protocols are a forgery needs to compare that forgery to the Talmud.
Right. Or to life. What is happening?
Right. Yeah. As Henry Ford said, my only comment on the protocols is that it's happening according to plan, and we
Right.
know who's doing it. That's why he wrote The International Jew,
Right.
a 4-volume book that documents Jewish criminality in America right around this time and after. Okay?
Right.
So, other local candidates would be affected as well, since they would be forced to choose sides if a case against ADL were to proceed, and much of their Jewish support would depend on the choice they made. Right? The Jews have no power whatsoever, Deanna. They're a persecuted people.
Oh,
They
yes, they're
have no money.
victims, poor
They're
things.
poor victims. They have no money. They have no influence. They have no power. Poor, poor Jews.
But that's how psychopathy works.
Right.
When you have a person who is a psychopath, whether it's a one person or whether it is a group of people, the first thing that they do is play the victim card.
That's right.
Oh, poor me, so that they can get the sympathy and empathy of whoever they're trying to target or exploit.
Right. And they have taught blacks how to do that. Okay?
Ah.
Taught blacks how to do that. And that's where the basis of a lot of these civil rights lawsuits, where in fact the blacks are perpetrators, but they play the race card. Right?
Well, given that the Jews have controlled the NAACP, you can see that that's what they, how,
Right.
why they wanted to control it.
That's right. So to teach blacks how to play the race card, where the Jews play the anti-Semite card.
Right.
Right? And so it's like Pavlov's dog. When the Pavlov trained the dogs to salivate by ringing a bell.
Right.
Okay? And when the bell, so he placed the food in front of the cage and ring the bell. And therefore, the connection between the food and the bell was made. And so eventually, you ring the bell, even without food, the dog's mouth begins to salivate. Okay? This is Skinnerian behaviorism. This is how people are trained to behave.
Right.
Okay? That's how they connect the word anti-Semite with anybody they choose to demonize. And the American public's brain shuts off and says, well, he's an anti-Semite. He can't possibly have anything worthy of listening to.
Right.
And therefore, we refuse to listen to anything any anti-Semite has to say. But isn't this name-calling?
Yes, of course,
Yeah.
but they can do it. It's
Yeah,
okay for them to do it.
the Jews can call us names.
We just can't call them what they
Yeah,
are.
they call us neo-Nazis, racists, anti-Semites, and whatever pejorative they choose.
Right.
Yet the public doesn't recognize it as name-calling and blatant racist accusation, right?
Right.
Racist slur. That's really what it is.
Sure.
It's a racist slur. But since their brains have been trained to shut down, once they hear that word anti-Semite, it never occurs to them that they're being brainwashed.
Right. Right, or that they have been brainwashed. They just it's an automatic response, just like
right.
the salivation.
Yeah, their faces go blank, they turn into zombies.
Right.
And all the Jew has to say is anti-Semite.
Right.
No discussion.
Yep.
End of discussion. Right?
Yep.
Don Bustany, president of the Los Angeles chapter of the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, gee, we should have an anti-discrimination committee for us, noted the irony in the district attorney's decision. Quote, "The ADL had been known for decades as a defender of rights for Jews and others, and now when it's caught violating the civil rights of literally thousands of Americans, it pulls political strings to escape responsibility."
How convenient.
Yeah. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy.
Yes.
Is hypocrisy. Now, on my website.
Do you mean the one that you used to have?
Yes. Yes, right. I'm still speaking of it in present tense because it will be coming back up. When Jesus Christ confronted the Pharisees, and those are the words of Jesus Christ. That's Luke 12, chapter 12, verse 1. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. And he accused these Pharisees to their faces of changing the law, making the law of Moses of none effect by instituting their own tradition. He accuses them of this in Matthew chapter 23. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He later says that if you had believed Moses, you would believe me.
Mm-hmm.
That this is Jesus Christ, ladies and gentlemen. Jesus Christ himself is stating that these Jews, these Pharisees, have changed the law of Moses for their own benefit, and that they do not believe Moses. And because they don't believe Moses, they do not believe him. Now, who are you going to believe? The ADL or Jesus Christ? Come on, Christian.
Unfortunately, I think many Christians aren't reading the scriptures.
Yeah, they're not reading the scriptures. Now, here is what the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 8, 1942, page 474, has to say about these Pharisees that Jesus Christ condemned on virtually every page of the four Gospels. Quote, "The Jewish religion, as it is today, traces its descent without a break through all the centuries from the Pharisees." Okay.
Now, where'd that come from?
This is the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 8, 1942, page 474. And it continues. "Their leading ideas and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature." So here are the Jews admitting that their religion is Pharisaism.
Yes. Right
okay.
out of their book.
It's right out of their own writing. And this is the type of information that I have been disseminating on my websites. And it's true because I'm quoting the Jews themselves.
Right.
See, and I got smart. I've been doing this research since about 1979. I started writing my book, The Great Impersonation, How the Antichrist Has Deceived the Whole World. Who could that be? Right?
Right.
By simply gathering as many Jewish books as I could find. Okay? Because very, very few Christians read anything put out by Jews, whether they're pro-Zionists or not. Christians simply don't read Jewish literature.
Right.
That's the way it is. Most Jews don't read Jewish literature, at least not the rabbinical kind.
Right.
Right? Most Jews, although I'd say most Jews are trained to hate Christ and trained to hate Christians. Jesus said, if you make a proselyte, the proselytes you make, speaking to the Pharisees, are twice the children of hell as yourselves. Some of these Jewish proselytes become communists. And they become abortionists, they become homosexuals and lead the homosexual lobby to destroy our morality, etc., etc., etc. They're twice the children of hell as the rabbis themselves.
Right.
Okay? Very, very rarely do you come across a Jew who who actually exposes this conspiracy, this Jewish conspiracy against Christianity. Very, very few Jews have ever dared to do this.
Right.
One is Benjamin Friedman.
Oh, yes.
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 Okay. So I advise everybody to look up the name Benjamin Friedman, F-R-E-E-D-M-A-N, and read his writings, because he reveals the inner workings of the Jewish secret society, and that's what Judaism is. Judaism is, it's not even a religion. Judaism is a criminal enterprise which uses religion as a cover for its gangland mafioso activities. The religion they practice is simply a cover for their criminality.
Right.
Okay?
Which is exploiting everybody on the planet.
That's right. But they have an especially intense hatred for people like me, because I tell the truth about their origins and the truth that they are not God's chosen people, Israel. They are, in fact, the synagogue of Satan, which is something that not even David Duke ever talks about.
Yeah, he can't talk about that too often because he's, you know, he's in Europe and he can get arrested.
So right. Right.
Got to be a little bit careful.
Yeah. Okay. So we still have, we have legally free speech here in America.
Right.
Okay. The Constitution guarantees it. So the only thing the ADL can do to people like me is to put pressure on my web host, as they did to you, you know, put pressure on you when you interviewed Ernst Sindel. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But legally, they cannot do anything to us, because they, you know, but now that doesn't prevent them from trying,
right?
Right? Because they can bribe politicians, judges, lawyers, etc., like they did in this case.
Right.
Okay. However, I'd say at this point in time, more and more people are becoming Jew savvy. In fact, the Occupy Wall Street movement and has been publicizing the fact that all of these Jewish criminals on Wall Street are the people responsible for bankrupting America.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have people like Patricia McAllister, who spoke out about this, and
yes.
She was part of the Occupy movement, and you have a lot of people who are listening.
Yes.
You really do.
Yeah, and the fact is that the more people like me and you that they victimize, the more angry the Jew-savvy public becomes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They are asking for a backlash. I don't want to say that we should, that there should be a backlash, but they are asking for a backlash.
Right. There, you know, the comment is, there wouldn't be so much anti-Semitism if there wasn't so much Semitism.
That's
now,
right.
They are not Semites.
That's right.
But that is certainly, you know, true.
Right, right. And that was well said by the author of this piece. It's the Jews themselves who caused the reaction to their own activities. In fact, Albert Einstein said exactly that. He said anti-Semitism is the reaction of people to what the Jews do.
Right.
Right?
And he should know.
Yeah, you should know. Okay? So when you study the writings of the Jews themselves, they admit all of this stuff. And that's been, you know, my mission. You know, number one, to expose what the Jews themselves admit. And, you know, we can get into communism. The Rabbi Stephen Wise, the chief rabbi of the United States in the 1920s, said, "Some people call it communism. I call it Judaism."
And that's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it was. Bolshevism is Judaism in action against the Goyim, right?
Yes.
So, and since those days, they were the Jews were actually very confident. And this is organized Jewry. Let me just make the caveat that not all Jews are communists. Not all Jews are Talmudists. But as you said earlier, when push comes to shove, most Jews, knowing what's at stake, and in many cases, it's their business, their livelihood, their reputation, the possible ostracism from their own community is what's at stake. And what happens to a viper when he's kicked into a field of dogs, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the viper? Well, he can't survive.
Right.
Can't survive. Or if he's thrown out in the desert, he can't survive. Jews are brought up to parasitize off the surrounding communities through their legal work, their medical work, their banking work, etc.
Their kosher laws.
Right. Yeah. And then what they do is then they bribe governments to pass laws favorable to the Jewish community.
Right. And then and they're 2%. They're 2% of the population.
Right.
In this
exactly. Sense. But they have all the money.
Yes.
2% has 99% of the money. Right.
Right.
So we're helpless when and then when people don't behave, when politicians don't behave, they have accidents.
Yes.
Right?
Or they get outed.
Yes.
Or like with the former governor.
Right.
Boyevich. I mean,
right.
He said that he wasn't going to do business with the Bank of America anymore, or that the state wasn't going to do business with the Bank of America anymore, and this had to do with him standing up for Republic Windows and Doors, who was going to have to go out of business because the Bank of America would not renew their loan, and
right.
They were going to have to lay off, I think they had almost 200 employees.
Yeah.
And so...
And there's no reason not to renew the loan.
Exactly. I mean, they just got all this bailout money, and
yeah.
We're not going to renew the loan to this good company.
Yeah, they got bailed out, and there's a parable in the New Testament about that, where Jesus talks about a landowner who.
Oh yes,
who,
I remember.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
a miscreant who was forgiven by his by his master,
right.
And then he goes around and then he.
Demands all the payments from the people that owe him.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what the Jews do. Okay?
Yep.
So even if you let them off, that does not change their criminal behavior.
Right.
They will just do it again because it's their religion and it's been ingrained into their culture for the last 2,500 years.
Right.
Okay? Many people have documented that the fractional reserve banking system was invented in old Babylon. It's the third beast of the Book of Revelation, and the Book of Revelation predicted that the third beast would be reborn as the eighth beast, known today as Mystery Babylon, the world empire of merchants. Okay, so why aren't the churches teaching anything about Revelation chapter 17 and 18, where this is talked about extensively?
Because they've all been infiltrated.
That's right. That's right. They've been infiltrated. The National Council of Churches, the World Council of Churches, communists and homosexuals deliberately infiltrating the churches in order to change its character, right?
Yep. And they start doing that in the 1800s.
Right. Right, but the main in recent years the main culprit has been the people who set up the Jews who own all the televangelistic TV stations.
Right, the Christian Zionists.
The Christian mm-hmm. Zionists. It's the television influence of the Christian Zionists has changed our culture dramatically in favor of the Jew and against the Christian, and the Christian doesn't even realize that it's happening.
And they don't even, and if they do realize it a little bit, they don't realize it. It is the Jews.
That's right. They blame it on the Arabs. Right?
Or they blame it on the left, the liberals.
Right.
Well, who do you think is running the liberals, people?
Right. Yeah, right. The 90% of Jews vote liberal all the time.
Yes.
Right? Right. It's the Jews. Again, it's the Jews. So, they rewrite history in vague terms, such that, communism, and this the John Birch Society was good at this too.
Mm-hmm.
They would talk about communism in intellectual terms, but they would never report who the communists were.
Right.
Right? The Lenins, the Trotskys, the Marxists, right?
Right.
Okay, God forbid that you should pronounce a Jewish name with respect to communism, right? But that's
right.
What they were. That's what Rosa Luxemburg in Germany. Bela Kun in Hungary, Jew after Jew after Jew, leads the communist revolution in that country, and the Western press says, because it's Jew-owned, says absolutely nothing about it. I want to mention one more Jewish name, and that is Myron Fagan. Okay.
Yes, he was a pretty good guy.
Myron Fagan, he did the best work of anybody on the Illuminati and the secret societies that are run by the Jews. He was Jewish himself.
Right.
He was a Jewish film producer, and Benjamin Friedman, both of these men were Jews, and they went out of their way to expose Jewish criminality.
They did.
Now, what the organized Jews would say is, well, these are self-hating Jews.
Of course.
Right? Okay. There's no such thing as a self-hating Jew. Right?
Right.
Two kinds of Jews. Those who believe in Judaism and follow its tenets, which are totally evil, and those who oppose Judaism. Okay? So the only kind of good Jew is the one who actively opposes his own religion. That's the only good Jew there is.
Right.
Okay? And that still does not make him an Israelite.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And, of course, the other litmus test, I think, is the Holocaust.
Right.
If they're going to promote the Holocaust but say, oh, Israel is doing a lot of really bad things, and they still promote the Holocaust, well, that's...
That excuses it, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. But that gives them the right to attack the Palestinian people, not one of whom ever did anything bad to a single Jew.
Exactly.
Right?
But then they compare the Palestinians to the Nazis, and that's
right. Yeah,
they get away with it.
It's the Jews who are the Nazis in this case.
Sure.
Right? And no offense to the Nazis, because the Nazis didn't do that, right?
Exactly. They surely didn't.
Okay. So is there any other group in the world that can possibly claim to be the world's greatest dictatorial genocidal race?
Nope.
It's the Jews, and the ADL is their mouthpiece.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, this has been a wonderful 2 hours.
Has the 2 hours gone by already?
It's over.
All right.
Yep. Thank you so much, Eli.
Deanna, I respect your courage for doing this interview, because you've already been harassed by them, and I know I can expect more harassment from them, but I'm just doing what
it's
my...
It's a badge of honor, Eli.
The Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they crucified him.
Yep.
I will not be intimidated by those who crucified Jesus Christ, Yahshua. No way.
Indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.